Number one, Star Wars. Number two, comics. Number three, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. Number four, Mario. Number five, Weird Al. Number six, Batman. Number seven, Kal-El. Number eight, The Simpsons. Number nine, TV. Number ten, every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out. Say it all together if you're with me now. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Say nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Nerds Ruin Everything. I'm Logan.
And I'm Adam.
And, we don't have an objective today, so this will be fun. I mean, it usually devolves into us rambling about whatever, but
yeah,
we don't have a point to get to. So this might be a 45-minute podcast. I doubt it, but you know,
yeah,
who knows? We'll see. Unfortunately, we're not gonna. This will come out when the Spider-Man trailer is dropping, because I'll edit it and post it probably tonight, early tomorrow, but it means we haven't seen it yet. So I've seen the teaser image, or it's like a GIF or something. You're using like, oh, look at us, we're doing the Amazing Fantasy 15 cover. Oh, okay. I mean, it's cool, but like, it's the kind of thing that would have been cool for the first Spider-Man movie, I think, with Tom Holland.
Yeah, I need to see a trailer. I need to see what the tone is. I hope the trailer is a true indication of what we're getting.
What do we know? Concrete, no. We know Scorpion is in it, right? Or at least Max Gargan is a character. Like, he's coming back.
Punisher is PG-13 Punisher, whatever that means. The Foot Clan, we're fairly certain that the Foot Clan is there. The Foot Clan. We were just talking about something else.
Ninja Turtles.
We know the that's so funny. The foot is there,
Mark,
because
Ruffalo is
no matter how much he tries badly to lie about these things, we kind of seen it on set.
Lies because he's gotten in so much trouble about saying it's all lies. Like, that's what they do, you know, because there's supposed to be such secrecy. But with Ruffalo, it became such a problem, A, that he had to have somebody on press tours. Like, somebody else had from the cast or crew or whoever had to be with him during interviews, so that if he started going too far, they could stop him. Because he is so... I think he's like a kid, you know?
Yeah.
Like, they're so excited about it, they just blurt everything out. He notoriously, quote-unquote, spoiled Infinity War by being like, well, we're all dead. That whole thing. So I think at this point he's just like, I just deny everything, and then whatever... when it comes out, then I can talk about it.
No, it's very true. And then also, I mean, like, the worst kept secret about Sadie Sink.
Jean Grey?
Yeah, that's pretty much been all but confirmed that she's Jean Grey. Like, this is the start of... my problem is that Marvel keeps on doing the thing the old way, and they need to stop that. Like, I'm sorry, but Kevin Feige, you need to stop and start giving clarity. Because at this point, with Endgame, they still feel like they're still in that. Like, it feels like Marvel is conducting itself the way that they conducted themselves back before Endgame had come out, and that they can still make $3 to $4 billion off of movies. And the thing is that
has not proven out.
Yeah.
So
not
for a while. I mean, the last truly real success they had was Spider-Man, right?
Yep. Yeah.
So I kind of get some secrecy behind it, because that's still a property that I think you can get people to show up and be excited for. It's still a little weird. Like, I'm with you doing this, like, tease everything, keep everything secret, and it's not...
It doesn't
work. It's starting to backfire, for sure. Yeah. Like, the Avengers promos, I think, more or less, despite the massive number of views they have, it's backfired, like, fandom-wise. A lot of people are like, okay, that's cool, but, like, could you show me something? And then it became like, why do we have Avengers footage and still no Spider-Man trailer? And Spider-Man is coming out in July, or, yeah, end of July, something like that.
Yeah, end of July. Yeah, it's, like, especially because we just got news this week that Aaron Pierre is in Man of Tomorrow. Like, how right. do we
and
get...
his show hasn't even dropped.
Dropped! Yeah! Like, Marvel keeps that kind of shit away from us for, like, they deny it, and then they get these blog boys come out and, like ruin the stuff, and it's like...
Right. Leaks happen. Like, their leaks are going to happen, no matter how much you try to plug it. We all knew about the trio of Spider-Man long before.
Yeah.
Like, we got the movie actually coming out. I mean, I hate the... We saw something similar with Deadpool. And then, literally the day it premiered, Ryan Reynolds has all of the cameo cast with him at Comic-Con. And that's okay. Like, I'm glad that wasn't spoiled. And the movie certainly didn't need to advertise those things. But it also wasn't plot dependent. Like, those characters were fun, but you also could have got by without, like, if it had just been called Deadpool 3 and they kept Wolverine from us, that would have been the thing that's like the worst kept secret, is that he's in that movie. Instead, we knew a year before, because of the Super Bowl, like, tease, or actually more than a year before, of Ryan Reynolds sitting on the couch talking about, I think it was at the Super Bowl. I don't remember.
Yeah, it was Super Bowl.
It was a commercial type of thing where him talking about, you know, the problems, like, why hasn't Deadpool 3 happened? And then Hugh Jackman walks by in the background playing on his, like, divorce, and now he's living with Ryan Reynolds.
Reynolds, yeah.
And he's like, hey, Hugh, you want to be in Deadpool 3? Yeah, sure, Ryan. Like, that's the thing. And, like, we do kind of know who's going to be in Spider-Man, but, like, keeping so much secret, that also leads to, like, all of this fanosphere shitheads either rumor mongering, because that is also what happened with Deadpool 3.
Yep.
We got nonstop fucking, this person's going to be in it, this person's going to, and you just, it was like overload, where it's like, I don't even care who the fuck is in it. Like, just make it a good movie. And it didn't backfire on Deadpool 3, but with Marvel's track record, it could backfire on something like Spider-Man. Where you don't see people show up the way they have in the past. So I don't know. It would be nice to have just had some kind of trailer, you know?
Yeah. Like, and just,
and we're getting it tomorrow. So
yeah,
but
be clear, just like, you know, give us a traditional trailer that just, it tells us what the story that we're going to be in, tells us the characters that we're going to see, like, at least for the most part, you know, you can save surprises, but, like, this whole, like, I'm just getting tired of Marvel's, like, shenanigans with, like, the hiding of things in plain sight when it doesn't need to be that. Like, we're going to go, like, sell me, like, I get more pissed that you're giving me
17 different little micro things that you have to make me go see. And I'm one of the few people that really liked Avatar, Fire and Ash, that literally you gave me 17 different little micro I mean, literally stuff that would normally on any other movie be on an Instagram reel and in the theater.
I appreciate that you were doing that and kind of like this parasitic relationship with you and Avatar. Okay, I get it, but we're going to do that, but then we're not going to release those teaser trailers for a week or 2 weeks or whatever it was.
Yeah.
So that you just have people trying to bootleg them and post them online, then you got to try to shut that down. And like, it's how much resources are you wasting by not just being like, here's the trailer, it'll be on the internet on Sunday. Like, we're going to run it on Avatar on the weekend, then that teaser trailer will be up on YouTube Sunday or Monday morning or whatever.
Yeah. It's ridiculous on every level. Like, I'm just, what it does is it really just kind of annoys me, like, more than anything else, because they're not really trailers. And then the fucking Russos, which don't even get me started on the directors of The Gray Man, fucking sitting there fucking, it's hiding in plain sight. It's about the thing. Shut the fuck up, guys. You guys are television directors.
They built up so much goodwill at Marvel with Feige and with fandom. Yeah. And like, despite their like not good track record leaving Marvel, in the literal few years since they did their last Marvel project.
Yeah.
Despite that, like, you still had, like, I don't love that they brought them back, but the one thing we can honestly say is that the Russos and Feige have made, like, the three of them together helped make the best Marvel movies.
Yeah.
Like, it's almost undeniable. Like, that trilogy of films of theirs is fucking incredible. They know how to handle multiple characters, like all of that shit. So,
well, actually, the quintet. I mean, if you don't consider the Avengers Endgame and Infinity War one movie, and you consider it two separate movies, you've got Winter Soldier, Civil War, and then I know that they don't call Civil War an Avengers movie because
it is an Avengers movie.
It's an Avengers movie. Come on, let's be honest. It has everybody in it. Like
yeah, if you include, I wasn't including Winter Soldier, but yes, if you include Winter Soldier, those, and Winter Soldier is great. Like that's, and it's not as many characters as the other movies, but
yeah.
But yeah, that's almost inarguably the four best MCU films. Like, maybe not my four favorite, but they are just fucking great. Like, beginning to end, like, everything about those movies, it's so what you want. And then you're coming back after, we're done. Like, just like Downey, just like fucking the Chris. The people who want more of what they liked are extremely happy. But then you burning all of that off by being like kind of gatekeeping douchebags.
Yeah. That's literally what it is.
Like, it's like talking to that dude at the comic book store when you're like, you're into this stuff, but like, you're not into the minutia of everything. And they're just, you know, the comic book guy who's just like, I can't believe you don't know. Like, no, man, like I don't want to fucking investigate every frame. I just want to understand what this is. Like, so can you just point me in the right direction? Like, you know, it's so frustrating. And since you brought up Green Lanterns,
Lanterns, yeah.
I love James Gunn. I love what he's doing. I love the people he's working with. He needs to tell Damon Lindelof to shut the fuck up.
Yes, he really does. He really does. Well, Damon Lindelof needs to shut the fuck up because any goodwill that he had with, like, any tiny amount of goodwill he got from creating the Watchmen TV series, literally any of that cachet has officially gone with his comments.
I mean, Grant Morrison is not, he's a very opinionated and I would say educationally opinionated person, especially even if you're just talking about geek culture wise, but I don't see him coming out and vocally going after a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's because like the DC universe is very near and dear to his heart. And he is, when he's blasting the guy who's show running, like saying like, well, this is not okay. It's not okay for you to, let me backpedal. Damon Lindelof, who is kind of overseeing Lanterns, came out last week and made some like offhanded comments about like basically calling it stupid, the concept stupid or like the green color scheme stupid. It was just some innocuous shit, which could be dismissed if you weren't the guy running the fucking show. Like, okay. It was like when, who was it, Goyer? Who made like some shitty ass comment about Martian Manhunter.
Yep.
While he's actively working with, I think he was working with Snyder and Company at the time and developing things. And it's like, dude, what are you doing, man? Like, okay, yes, Batman is a universal property and you don't have to be like really into the comics to enjoy Batman. You know, you're going to kind of hit all markets when you're doing Batman or Superman, but you're also touching into geek culture. So maybe don't go after something else that those people probably love. Because then they're not going to want to. They're not going to want to back your fucking shit, you know. It's just baffling to me. And Lindelof of all fucking people,
I don't understand what is happening.
Like, this is a dude who's into this shit.
Yeah.
Like, okay, you don't like the green and Green Lantern. Okay. Shut the fuck up.
It's really wild to just I don't understand. Like, I really don't. Like, it's one of those things that I'm just like, okay, well, yeah. Like, here's the thing is that there are so many goddamn people, so many fucking people that like are on the outside in on like trying to create shows, like so many more talented people than Damon Lindelof, like so many more, like there are so many that don't like. Okay, so like we just got news that Sarah Michelle Gellar and Chloe Zhao's reboot of Buffy got canceled because some stupid piece of shit Hulu executive
was like, I didn't really like the show. I don't get why anybody liked it. Dude, it doesn't matter. People fucking liked it. In the same breath, it's taken like 25 years for any kind of movement, or 20 years, or however long it's been, for any kind of movement on an actual Firefly property that isn't, we wrote a comic book. Like,
yeah,
the comic books for years kept that property alive. You know, beyond like just the actual fandom, like it kept stories going in that universe, and that kind of fizzled out, which it's fine. And it took Fillion establishing his own production company, like he's Ryan Reynolds-ing this shit.
Yep.
And like he doesn't own it, but like he did get the, you know, the cooperation of, but like he, him and his production company from, I mean, from what I understand, maybe I'm wrong, did a lot of the legwork on this, mm-hmm. where it's just like, we're fucking willing this to happen. And it was, you know, kind of similar with Buffy, but I feel like it happened a lot quicker with Buffy, where it went from like, yeah, we could do this to like, oh, we're actively developing it. Firefly, it seems like he's been working on getting this done for a while. And just for some executive to be like, I didn't really like that show. It's, well, okay, well, it's not fucking made for you, man. Like, I didn't watch Buffy either, but like, I mean, unless it was just bad, but I don't, I'm going to say something that, you know, if a Buffy fan's listen to this, I'm sorry, not sorry. Mm. I don't know how it could be any worse than the worst parts of that show, because from what I have seen, it, like, I was just like, die, this is not for me. Like, it's so goofy and just teen angsty. And I did watch the first season of Angel, and I liked it. I never followed back up and watched any more of it, but I thought the first season of Angel was really good. But yeah, I watched like four seasons of Buffy, because I was like, everybody talks about this. And so I watched it long enough for Angel to split off and become its own show. And then after the end of the first season of Angel, I was out on everything.
And like, here's the thing is that, yeah, it's not for everybody, but you know what? There is an audience for it. And yeah. You decline, like, you deciding not to make a hit, like a show that would probably instantly be a hit.
When was the last season of Buffy?
2003.
So, much like Firefly.
Yeah.
We're talking about a show that ended 20 years ago. And people still talk about. And not talk about in a negative way. Like, people still kind of, especially in the geek world, still talk about Lost. But generally when we talk about Lost, it's like, yeah, we're comparing it something to Lost because it started out great and then ended badly. We compare something to Heroes because it started out great and then ended badly. Like, mm-hmm. They're negative comparisons. When people talk about Buffy, they're talking about Buffy, and they're usually talking about how much they fucking love Buffy. So,
like, that fan base is super fucking hardcore. And you to deny that, you as an executive to sit there and not greenlight that shit, even if you didn't get it. Like, let's say it's professional. I mean, it's Chloe Zhao. She's been nominated. She won an Academy Award, and she was nominated. You motherfuckers are sitting there greenlighting every piece of shit. Ryan Murphy
could fucking spit into a cup, and they'd be like, "That's a show. That's a show." And don't get me wrong, I like Ryan Murphy. Like, I've been out on him for a while just because the man is doing too fucking much, but. I like that, just like Shonda Rhimes, just like Taylor Sheridan, who I also am mostly out on. Mm-hmm. But I don't hold any ill will over the fact that, like, they can get their shit done. Like, they get stuff on. Like, good for you, man. Like, good for you. Like, even if it's shit, like Ryan Murphy especially, that kind of just pisses on people that are still alive. And it's just like, yeah, maybe you should have like fact checked some of this shit or been a little more, referential to these people who are still around.
like that stupid fucking Kennedy. Okay. Can we just sidestep? Like, I'm at a point now where I now understand my dad's hatred of like the baby boomer recontextualization of the 60s. It, like, he did not, like, he kind of liked Wonder Years at first, but then he became a true hater of that show and would just refuse to, like, leave it on the TV, so much so that I had to actually watch, I had to have my mom record it so I could watch it at home. Watching the, like, watching some of the episodes of this John F. Kennedy Jr. Carolyn like love story bullshit, I now understand his hatred for the recontextualization, because literally they are treating this shit like it is like the love story of all time, that there were like there were epic fights and there were, and I'm like, you know, John Kennedy Jr. was a fucking, Jack Kennedy Jr., John, as they used to call him, was a Nepo baby. And he had to get fucking, nobody was going to buy George, a political magazine. So they always had like Maxim, like level cover girls on it. I'm like, why are we rewriting history for a Kennedy again? This guy was not a good guy. Like, I don't know why y'all are doing this. And all of a sudden, like, and like everybody's lapping it up. Like, people have mystifyingly like are like, oh my God, the 90s are back. And I'm like, you know, the 90s there were some good shit in the 90s, but you know, there was also some really bad, stupid stuff. And this Kennedy Jr. Carolyn love romance that's gonna end in, oh, a plane crash that they never should have gone on the damn plane in the first place, like, ends in tragedy. Oh, well, okay. Thank you, Ryan Murphy. Please continue to, like when is he going to do AI slop? Like, I'm just waiting for it. I'm waiting for him to, like, create AI stuff. Like, him and, I am fairly certain Taylor Sheridan is using AI to write his 38,000 shows. I guarantee, I went back, like, here's a weird, interesting note. I went back over the week, because, The Ringer podcast they're doing this thing for this month, and they're going, it's a month of like Chris Ryan, the film critic and podcaster. He's doing, like, he's allowed to choose the movies. And one of the movies they chose was Sicario. I fucking love Sicario. And it's been a few years since I've seen it. I went back and watched it, and I was like, Jesus Christ, Taylor Sheridan, this is the reason why he got Yellowstone, was because of this damn movie. This damn movie is so damn good, so damn well written. And it's like, I watch now and it's like, who is this dude? Who is this guy that writes this show? And I can tell you, like, so, okay, like, so weird side tangent. I had no context, but because you've raved about Landman. And so like, I had to like, I did the wrong thing. I watched a random episode because it was just like, okay, you know what? I just kind of want to see it, because it was after I watched Sicario. I was like, you know what? I've been hearing all this weird ass stuff about this whole weird, this Sam Elliott episode. And I watched that episode and I'm like, I stood there stunned. Like, I didn't have any context for it. And maybe that's the reason why. Maybe there's a buildup.
Sam Elliott episode?
No, it's the second one, the one with the stripper. Okay. The stripper where they solve his issues. Like, I stood there stunned, Logan. I was like, what? What's happening in this show? Like, it literally feels like Taylor Sheridan was like, GPT chat, write me an episode where. Like, okay, I don't even get how Sam Elliott is the father of fucking Billy Bob Thornton. But okay,
it's so I'm enjoying Landman, but you know, not in the way that, like, I still watch Walking Dead shit where I'm just like, I'm just kind of Landman. It's a show I enjoy watching with Stephanie. She likes it, but we also watch it, and I don't want to say criticize, but kind of just like, what the fuck? Like, that where you're just like,
yes, well,
that's insane. That's like, all we kind of just like poke at it while we're watching it and like argue with the characters, like, what the fuck is this guy doing? You know, stuff like that. And so another show I've watched and have kind of lobbied to get you to watch is Paradise.
Yes, and I'm going to be watching that. That's next on my list.
It's not the same. Like, Paradise also has a, like, what the fuck kind of vibe to it.
Yeah.
But just in a way of, like, when they pull something, much like Lost at its best, when they pull something off, it's just like, what?
Yeah.
Like, oh my God, what is happening? And it keeps you like sucked in where you're just like, I can't wait to watch the next episode. Landman is not like that. I will ultimately forget about Landman until the next season of Landman comes out. You know what I mean?
Yes. Where
it's like, I feel like Paradise is going to be like this little hamster in back of my head, like running on a wheel, like very small, very like not taking up a lot of headspace, but much like Lost at its best, where it's like, even in the off season, when I don't have episodes, I'm still thinking about like, but what does this mean? And what did this character mean when they said that, you know, shit like that. So, yeah. But I mean, just talking about Taylor Sheridan, has there been, I guess Shonda Rhimes before him, but I mean, and Ryan Murphy, but Ryan Murphy's been at it for a while.
Yeah.
And I feel like Shonda Rhimes has too. Mm-hmm. I mean, Sicario came out in 2015.
Yeah.
That's 11 years ago. So yep. Even if they were in production, even if he wrote the script in 2014 or 2013, and they were in production in 2014, like, we're still talking about not 15 years since Taylor Sheridan, like, not that he wasn't busting his ass, but the dude is not old. We're not talking about a fucking 65-year-old man. So
no. This guy's like my age. He's like literally my age. He's like,
he's 50, I think.
He's like, I mean, plus or minus a couple of years, right? I think he's like 51 or 52. But also like is dating like dating, what is it, Gigi Hadid or whatever? Like, he has like this empire that he's built, right? Like, and all I can think of is one thing. Like, and it's the same thing I think of Ryan Murphy, cocaine. Because how can you write 38,000 shows and not Dude. One of them be good?
And but here's the thing, like, so not I hate to get on the Taylor Sheridan thing.
Yeah.
And I'm not defending the guy because, like, we've talked about it. Like, you watched Tulsa King, and I was just like, I don't do Taylor Sheridan. It took literally, you know, a girl that I'm in a relationship with to be like, well, I like this show. I want you to watch it with me. Like, okay. But I mean, you have what, 1883, beyond the people he works with in Yellowstone.
Yeah.
Like, that brings in some people, including Kevin Costner. But then in 1883, like, he gets to know Sam Elliott, so now Sam Elliott's in his world. Tulsa King, you have Stallone and everybody that kind of is in Stallone's sphere. Mayor of Kingstown, you have Jeremy Renner and a lot of people in that sphere. Landman, you bring Demi Moore into the fold, on top of Billy Bob Thornton, and now you have the Madison, which
oh God, like, okay,
I don't want to be in on this show, but it's fucking Michelle Pfeiffer and Kurt Russell.
But also, like, okay,
I want to watch them in something together. You know what I mean? It's like, I want to watch this for them, but like, I don't want to watch this show.
But you also know, like, the worst kept secret about this fucking show. Like, you know what the worst kept secret is that, like, it's very obvious from the trailer that Russell is dead. Like, he's playing his, like, there's two separate timelines. I'm like, okay, so you're basically giving me this tragic love story about them starting, like, her starting over again. City girl and cowboy who met some time ago and they fell in love and he died because of some kind of tragic thing. And we're not going to find out until the end of the first season. And it's going to be super, like, horrible. And she moves the family back to the country to find the roots and the soul because she lost her soul. Okay, fine. Like, And again, like, I'm looking at it and I'm going, Kurt Russell, goddamn, like, you got me, you son of a bitch. You son of a bitch. You cocaine addicted son of a bitch. Because you, like, people are, and here's the, okay, so here's the other thing that people don't know is that he signed with Peacock. Next year, all of his work with fucking Paramount stops and he goes over to Peacock and starts making shit for them. He's already got, he's got things in the burner. That's why a lot of his shows are ending. Like, I think that at the end of everything, Madison is the only thing that he's going to be doing. So, like, starting beginning in 2027, he has literally got an exclusive contract with Universal. Like, Universal paid a big money for him. Like, to do movie, like, the big thing was, and, you know, the oldest boy, David Ellison, couldn't get him away from Universal because he wants to make movies. Taylor Sheridan supposedly wants to make movies again, which I'm going to find hilarious. That's where it
started. I mean, you had Sicario, Hell or High Water, Wind River, and Day of the Soledad.
The Day of the Soledad. But of those movies, there's only one that's not, is kind of, and that's the sequel to Sicario, and that's a lot of it has to do with the fact that Denis Villeneuve is not directing that movie. I guarantee you, like, he went off to bigger, better things. I mean, like, I still find it wild that Denis Villeneuve directed the first Sicario, but then you watch the first Sicario, and you're like, holy shit, this is a great movie. It's literally, and then Hell or High Water is just as good, but also David Mackenzie, who is a great, great, great director. But he wants to go back to movies, which I understand. But he also wants to do TV. He wants to have, like, he literally, like, it was funny because, like, I often think of, like, when I think of him, I think of, what's his name from West Wing? Good Lord, what is his name? The writer of the West Wing. Social Aaron Network. Sorkin. Aaron Sorkin. Because Aaron Sorkin, like, it came out, like, everybody was like, how is he doing this? How is he doing, cocaine. Like, cocaine? Cocaine!
There is, I saw it, it was, like, memeified, but somebody clipped, Stephen King has a book called, I think it's from Own Writing.
Yeah, it's Own Writing.
He talks about, like, what his, like, if you want to be a writer, these are the things you have to do. And, like, it's a little unrealistic. And because at the time, like, he's talking about what he did. Or he's not saying what you have to do, what he did. Like, watching, like, a movie, like, reading a book every other day. And like, writing, like, this many pages. And also, he was a teacher at the time. And somebody's like, I read this and I was like, how the fuck did Stephen King do all of this and not, like, with the amount of time that he had? And then I remembered cocaine. That's how he did it. Cocaine.
So if you want to see, like, if you want to see Stephen King and what cocaine does to you, go ahead and look up Maximum Overdrive teaser trailer, and the look in his face when he turns to the camera and he says, if you want something done right, you do it yourself. That is a man in the throes of a relationship with cocaine that will never end. That is like 80s pure yayo cocaine, like the stuff that doesn't exist anymore. The stuff he probably got was like once removed from Pablo Escobar. And only a man that high on cocaine would think that Stanley, like, not only thought that Stanley Kubrick did a bad job with directing The Shining, but thought that was his Rosetta Stone to go, I can fucking direct a movie. That's how much you know that a man is on cocaine, is that he actually sat there and went, watched The Shining and said it was shitty, and then went, oh, I can do better than Stanley fucking Kubrick. And the answer to that is no, you can't. Because the only person that gets to talk shit about Stanley Kubrick is Robert Duvall. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, look it up. You'll see. You'll know what I'm talking about because he actually makes a salient point about Stanley Kubrick, and only Robert Duvall gets to make that point because he's fucking Robert Duvall. And that's one dude. Like, okay, so that's another thing. How do you know that Taylor Sheridan is fake sauce and is just writing all these shows to make money? Is because Duvall didn't do anything with him.
Yeah.
Duvall never did any movies with him. Like, Duvall is a true cowboy. He made possibly the best Western of all time in Lonesome Dove. Like, I'm not saying it's the greatest Western, but like what is arguably one of the best Westerns of all time, Lonesome Dove. Like, he was a cowboy's cowboy. Like, he was a man that eventually just he was, right? I mean, Tender Mercies, everything. But anywho, like, I just find it, like, I find it wild, like, to go back to, like, the whole thing of, like, there are people that actually genuinely care about this stuff, right? And they are not creators. But these little fucking, this, like, it's this circle jerk of, and we're going to get to, like, we're going to talk a little bit about the Oscars and, like, the kind of, like, thing that I find refreshing about this year's Oscars. And there's only, two or three things that I found refreshing. But it's the fact that, like, there are people that genuinely care out there and they're genuinely talented and they're closed off and gatekept away from things because of executives that don't know how to do their job and they're so fucking scared of losing their six-figure job.
Yeah.
And other producers that know how to game the system. Like, Damon Lindelof knows how to... He gamed the system, right? I mean, think about it. He got on Lost. I mean, he was on Crossing Jordan. He did the numbers on Crossing Jordan, right? Like, he literally sat there and worked up from Crossing Jordan onto Lost. And... He got in with, I mean, what did he do? He got in on his shit with, what's his name? With JJ. And I'm just like, I'm like, everybody on Lost, with the exception of Drew Goddard, who actually came in late, who's a Buffy guy, which is always funny to me because Drew Goddard is also the guy who we're going to be talking about next week, where he's doing the adaptation of Hail Mary. Like, he's a true talent, right? Like, of all these guys,
I do like Drew Goddard. I think he's underutilized for sure. Mm-hmm.
But most of these guys, like, it's like Lindelof doing Lanterns, which was done before, which was in production. But, like, this is the funniest part to me is that this was a show that was created before the Gunverse came into fruition. It was something that was greenlit. But here's the genius of Gunn is like, okay, you're doing this. I'm going to pilfer from this and still let you do your thing. I'm not going to be a dick about it because we need shows like this. We need a gritty take on things where people say fuck a lot. Because I did something like that. But I mean, like, you know, but you can instantly tell that this is not James Gunn's DCU. Like, instantly, you go, oh, I get it. It's just going to be some kind of serial killer with powers. Okay. Yeah. And you're wasting Kyle Chandler and you're wasting Aaron Pierre. And, I mean, they're doing it because, you know, they're doing it. But so you're not going to be in space. You're not going to have other lanterns. It's going to be grounded. And my question to you is this. Why are you making a Green Lantern story if you hate Green Lantern so fucking much?
That's exactly what what's his name said that I was talking about. Grant Morrison.
Yeah.
He was like, why are you doing this show then? Like, if you think this is stupid, why are you here? Like, go work on something you don't think is stupid. Don't come into my sandbox, tell me all my toys are dumb, and then tell me you can do it better. I like my toys.
Yep.
Go away. So, I mean, I still have hope for the series. I think Lindelof, when he has the right people around him, for sure, can do really, really great things. But I think you should just probably shut up and, like... And it feels like the, like, it could be that this thing of like, I think I have to say that this is stupid so that certain sects of people, certain, you know, people, groups don't think that I'm just a nerd guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's that whole thing of like when you're in high school and like you have people that know you read comics and people that you would never tell that you read comics.
Yep.
And if they brought it up, you'd be like, yeah, comics are stupid. They're for kids. And meanwhile, like you got 9 long boxes at home full of X-Men. It's that it feels like that kind of thing. And that's not the fucking world that we live in anymore. Or at least it shouldn't be, because I mean, superhero shit is still driving a lot of the, or at least nerd culture is still driving a lot of the choices that are being made from the studios. Like mm-hmm. they want franchises. They want, you know, these built-in audiences. It's baffling. did you see to pivot and then we can get into the Oscars? Rumor/news that a certain someone is filming scenes for Sonic 4 right now.
No, who is filming scenes for Sonic 4?
Jim Carrey. I mean,
oh, you know, okay. No, I did not already.
Not a huge secret, because despite his like, I'm retired, like he does very much seem down to just play in this world. Because he was retired after the first one. He was retired after the second one. He was retired after the third one. So it's not a huge surprise for him to be back in the fourth one. But yeah, I forget who I saw posted it, but a fairly reputable was like, we're getting word that Jim Carrey is filming scenes right now for Sonic the Hedgehog 4.
Oh, so wow.
Okay. That's kind of fun. So
yeah, no, that is fun.
The fucking bizarre controversy around his like French.
Oh my God.
So weird.
Yeah. Did he use a double or was it him?
Yeah. Like, and so many people like having to come out and like verify that it was him. And then you have all these like fake AI created videos of him, of like somebody undergoing prosthetics or of him removing prosthetics. But like the thing about all of that is Jim Carrey's such a bizarre person that there's no fucking telling. Like,
yeah,
it's Andy Kaufman level of like, what's the truth? Because who the hell knows? Like, everything's almost a performance with him.
It really is. It's a very performative life that he leads. And I'm like, that is some weird stuff. But yeah. I mean, Carrey has always been like, he's like most comedians. He's always on. Like, he's never not on, you know? It was like, you know, like whenever I look at like Robin Williams clips now, I get really sad, because you could tell the whole, you know, Baliachi, the clown,
the sad clown,
like, you know, hiding behind all of the stuff. And it's like, you know, like Carrie, it's very much, I feel like that, like there's this, I love Carrie. Like, I mean, you know, we grew up with Carrie, right? Like,
yeah,
like not even like Ace Ventura, like in Living Color.
Yeah.
Like he was
on TV every week. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. And to see him like you could just, you knew like he was an empty vessel. Like anybody that like that, like Peter Sellers, like a guy who can do so many characters. And like, I will say that he's like Sellers, where he disappears, like Robin Williams disappears in roles, like where he was like, you cannot tell where the act begins and ends, right? Like, it wasn't just
the Andy Kaufman stuff. It was like literally every single character was a character onto themselves. And that usually means that you're an empty vessel. And like outside of the time, and then I'm not trying to dog on him. It's just the literal truth. And I mean, you can just kind of tell behind the eyes. You can see that there's something infinitely sad about Jim Carrey. And but it also goes back to the fact that there was a second one they said that he used a body double that I was like, you know, this dude is kind of crazy enough to do some shit like that. But then you watch and you go, no, that's Jim Carrey. Nobody can imitate Jim Carrey like Jim Carrey can. So yeah, no, absolutely. That's actually very exciting. I have to ask you something. The thing that bothers me about the Sonic movies is that they're getting progressively longer and longer.
I don't love that because they're kids' movies, and like I know. Like, we want to be, like, in that world for a little while longer, but I don't need a 2-hour and 15-minute Sonic the Hedgehog movie. Like, I mean, by comparison, yesterday I went to the theater and saw my least favorite Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie, which is saying something because those Michael Bay movies are not good.
Yeah.
But like, I think Secret of the Ooze is, I'm not saying it's terrible, but it is my least favorite of those movies. I don't know why it sits like so wrong for me, but it just does.
Like, it's the tone. I mean, like, to me, it's the tone.
Yeah. Coming off of that first movie.
Yeah, exactly.
It does feel like this hard pivot into like, oh, the cartoon's popular. Let's do the cartoon.
And but even then, okay, so here's the thing. Is that even
if you watch Batman and Robin, you know, where it's just like, what the fuck is this, man? Like, at least Batman Forever has some of the, like, darkness still to it, you know, where it's like, it's not goofy. But it's just like, oh, nipples on the bat suit. Yeah, like, yeah, this is fucking weird, man. Like, what are y'all doing? My point is that Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, Secret of the Ooze, is almost exactly 90 minutes long.
Yeah. So, you know, and I don't get, like, the older I get, the more I'm like, yeah, give me, like, you know, the sweet spot is between 95 to 105 minutes. But realistically, probably 95 minutes. Like, if you can make a story in 95 minutes, like, of course, there are always the exceptions to the rules. But if you can give me a 95-minute movie, that's a sweet spot for me. I'll watch anything at 95 minutes, right?
It's funny because I was Steph and I were having this conversation yesterday. And, I was being a little too, like, super nerdy about it. Now I got on my little high horse of like, this is what the downfall of like actual film caused. Because if you don't know, which a lot of people, you know, don't because they, you know, weren't raised on movies shot on actual film. Like one of the reasons old movies aren't super long is because you only have so much film. Like that roll of film is what you have for the movie. And it had to go from place to place. Like they didn't have the money to make multiple copies. And also, like, if it took more than one film reel, that was a problem because then they had to, it was one movie with two film reels that they then also still had to ship from place to place. Like, so a 90-minute movie would be one film reel, and then that's what you did. That's what you had. You had to make your movie based on like it fitting on one reel of film.
That's exactly what it is. And it's like, and now that the advent of digital, there is nothing like that.
Once
hard drive space.
Tape came into play, it was a little bit different. Because, like, once you started shooting on, like, videotape, it was a lot cheaper. But you still had, like, only so much tape that, like, a thing could handle.
Yes.
Then went digital, and every fucking body that makes a movie has to make a 3-hour movie.
Yep.
So, anyway, that was my soapbox of, like, everything going digital was the fucking death of the tight 90-minute movie of, like, well, that was fun, and, you know, they understood they didn't have to explain every little nuanced fucking thing and, like, get into the weeds with this, and, like, you had to really be able to tell a story, and, you know, this would be a good pivot into the Oscars. Editing was a legit fucking art form. Not saying it still isn't, but, like, if you look at the best editing category, like, there's, I don't know if there's a movie in there. Like, I didn't see them all, obviously. But, like, is there a movie that feels tightly edited? You probably saw most of them, if not all of them.
No, I did. I did see most of them. And then let me just take a look at the edit.
Well, I saw One Battle After Another. I got the list pulled up. Best Achievement in Film Editing. One Battle After Another, F1, Marty Supreme, Sinners, and Sentimental Value. I didn't see Marty Supreme, and I didn't see Sentimental Value.
I mean, they're both 2-hour-plus movies. I would say that because, like, to be perfectly honest, it, like, F1 was about 205, or no, it wasn't. It felt like it was 205, but it was really F1, a 2.5-hour movie.
Moves, man. Like, yeah. So One Battle After Another won. I disagree with that.
Oh, I disagree with that too.
I don't think that movie, like, not that the movie isn't well, like, it does flow, but mm-hmm. I also don't know, like, did Andy Jurgensen, who won, like, help craft that narrative, or
was it Paul Thomas Anderson?
Yeah, I have a really hard time believing that Paul Thomas Anderson was not standing over Andy Jurgensen's shoulder going, like, no, like, you gotta let this scene's gotta breathe. This, like, I think it's not really a one-to-one, but, like, Tarantino losing Sally Mankey, like, you watch Tarantino post Sally Mankey, and it's like, yeah, this is a different fucking person. Like,
oh, yeah.
That was somebody who could tell Tarantino, like, what was and wasn't working. I don't know if anybody at this point can tell PTA. And I think it's been that way for a long time.
Since he broke up with his initial editor, Dylan Technor. Technor is like, an editor that, like, as an editor's editor, like, if you look at his work, like, there's a reason why Boogie Nights moves. There's a reason why, like, Magnolia moves. And it's because even though they're monstrous movies, there is no excessiveness, or there's moments of excessiveness, but there's a flow to it. As soon as they broke up, it's become very kind of Kubrickian in his, and this is a man who loves PTA. Like, I don't think that he, like, I think that there are faults to his movies now. But, like, his like, first, like, 3 or 4 features are almost unimpeachable. I mean, like, Punch Drunk Love. I mean, that's a movie that actually proves, like, it's a 95-minute movie. There's no fat on that movie.
And it is also a movie that breathes. Like, yeah. It's proof that, like, that's proof in the pudding, right? Of, like,
yeah,
you can have a tight movie and also let things, because there are scenes in that movie that you're just dwelling with that character.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Absolutely. Like there are moments, I mean, because it's a character piece, but also it's a 90-minute movie and it moves. Like, you're, like, before you know it, you're off to Hawaii in that movie.
And you're like, what the fuck is going on? And then he falls in love, and then he's off to Utah and confronting Philip Seymour Hoffman, and then it's done. It's like, like the movie definitely knows how to move. And I mean, you know, awards bait movies like are the worst at run times. Like, it's almost like the self-importance gets the better of everybody.
Yeah.
I will say this.
I'm saying this as a guy whose favorite film of all time is Shawshank Redemption, which is a very long movie.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Look, I don't find that I don't like, I mean, this, there's two sides of me, right? And this is the thing that we over the last couple of years, I hope that people understand this, is that there's two sides of me. Like, there's not just, or there's multitudes. We're both multifaceted people, but I think in my movie taste, it becomes very apparent that I like high art, but I also like low art. And the other thing that I don't stand for more than anything else is somebody being up their own ass. Like, the thing that I found pleasant about a movie that we never talked about that I saw, that I'm gonna own when it comes out on 4K through the Criterion Collection, is Sentimental Value. The reason why is because that movie is so, like, you think it's one thing, but it's not. It's darkly hilarious. Like, Stellan Skarsgård, there's a reason why he was nominated, because he is so fucking hilariously dark in that movie. He is a piece of unrepentant piece of shit, but he's sort of funny in the movie. And like, that movie is a movie that, like, if you look at face value and you go, why would I want to see a 2.5 hour Norwegian? Like, it's like the Saturday Night Live. I don't know if you saw the Saturday Night Live skit with him and his son. Like, no. Doing, like, okay.
That's funny, if, though.
Yeah. There's a skit that they did together on the show about, like, Norwegian family dramas, right? And it's like, you would think it's that. But this movie is not that. Like, it's a pretty warm movie, but it's also, like, really darkly funny. Like, he's sitting there and he's like, yeah, it was a piece of shit, but you got everything you wanted. What do you want from me? Like, he, like, at a certain point, he gives his grandson as a birthday present, who's 8 years old, the collected works of Gaspar Noé, like you know, the guy who made Irreversible.
Yeah,
like
does not make movies a child should ever watch.
But he literally gives his grandchild a DVD collection of Gaspar Noé, and you literally sit there and go, this guy is the worst human being in the world, and it's funny. But like. I can appreciate a movie that subverts expectations like that, right? Whereas, like, something like Hamnet, man, that movie is so just kind of like, here's the Oscar.
So, Oscar, okay, game. So you brought up Hamnet. Do you think her winning is the right call there? Kate Hudson was my pick, but I also didn't see If I Had Legs, Hamnet, or Sentimental Value. So
I thought that either Rose Byrne should have won. Like, honestly, like,
I've heard nothing but good things her performance in If I Had Legs, I'd Kick You.
Like, to be perfectly honest, I understand why. Like Jesse Buckley won because, like, you know, it's about a mother dealing with a child's death, right? Like, it's all grief and all that. It's Oscar bait. It's like, literally, like, it's Oscar bait. Like it's designed to win an Academy Award. My pick was Rose Byrne, followed by, like, let's just give Emma Stone the third one.
I would not have been at all fucking mad if Emma Stone won for Begonia. I'm honest, like, of all the big movies that were nominated for so many things.
Yeah.
Begonia's the one that I'm a little upset got no real love.
Well, like, we talked about it. 10 years from now, everybody's going to be like, why the fuck did we all sleep on Begonia? Because Jesse Plemons wasn't fucking nominated. How was he not nominated? Like, how was the kid who fucking, the kid, the tragedy, like, how did he not get nominated?
leading role, you have Michael B. Jordan, Timothy Chalamet, Leonardo DiCaprio, Ethan Hawke, and Wagner Moura for Secret Agent, which I've heard really good things about Secret Agent.
It's awesome, dude. Like, that movie is awesome. Like, I was genuinely surprised at how much of the era, like, it feels so fresh and new, even though it's like a 70s, like, it takes place in the 70s in Brazil. It's a very prescient movie to our times. I will just leave it at that.
Now,
but
go ahead. I do think I don't know who you knock out. I say Timothy Chalamet, but I didn't see Marty Supreme. So, but I'm with you. How Plemons doesn't get nominated, it's beyond me. Well, but
I also think
all those actors are really good and not at all fucking mad about Michael B. Jordan winning.
Oh, fucking no, not good at all. For him. Not at all. Like that needed to be done. Like, as soon as, like I've been, like, rooting for him to win because, like, you know, double the performance. I mean, Leo's already won one. You know, Ethan, like, it's just not his time yet. He will get there. Like, he will, like I guarantee you he will win one. Like, it's just, it's not right now. Like, Ethan Hawke is, like, it's just not there yet, right? Like, he will. Chalamet, he's great in the movie. I mean, him going too hard in the egotist thing, like, didn't hurt him, but... Also,
I don't think it's gonna help him going forward because, like, and I know that, like, that whole, like, ballet thing is going around. That interview was from quite a while ago. And, like, it was also, like, he grew up in a family of, like, performers. Yeah. Like, his aunt, I think, is a ballet performer. So, like, it feels like him, much like the Damon Lindelof, like, Green is stupid.
Yeah.
It feels like that, and it's like, you should probably have just shut up. But I also, like, what's really funny is, like, I disagree with, like, again, this was a while ago, but I can look at it and go, I disagree with the way he's saying it and, like, the kind of, like, dismissiveness he's saying with, but saying that people don't care about it, what he means is the general public doesn't give a shit about it, and he's not wrong.
No, but mostly also... because,
have you tried to go to an actual ballet lately? Have you tried to go to an actual opera performance? Like, have you tried just going to the fucking theater lately?
Which I feel like this is going to change. It's going to become a... Like, as AI slop continues to rise and people want real human connection, I feel like it's gonna, like, they're gonna start to find ways to make theater affordable for people because that's what people are gonna want to see. I know that sounds weird, but I honestly think that that's gonna be something that we're gonna see in the next, like, 10 to 15 years because it's gonna be a rejection of corporate America, but neither here nor there. But you're also right. Like, but also, like, he went too hard for somebody who, like, you know what it was? Like, to be perfectly honest, the reason why Chalamet did not win was because he didn't conduct himself in the way that kids normally, and he's a kid. I mean, he's literally 30.
Yeah, just to most of Hollywood, he is a fucking child. And
a nepo baby at that, because his mom his mom was a casting agent. His mom got him jobs. Like the first big role, like my favorite part, my favorite story is the first huge role that his mom did not help him get, that he had to go off on himself, was Spider-Man. And he lost.
To a guy who came from ballet?
Ballet. Yeah. Who came from dance and ballet.
Let's see.
But
other acting categories. So let's supporting actor. Let's see. I probably wouldn't have been upset if Jacob Elordi won, but, like, literally the winner, Sean Penn, versus, like, leave Jacob Elordi aside, Benicio del Toro, Stellan Skarsgård, Delroy Lindo. Delroy Lindahl should have got it. Like, I'm sorry. That's performance. Like, he always delivers, but it is a, like, defining performance of his career. Like, it it's the thing, like, not to sound morbid, but when this man passes away, like, it's going to be this thing. Like, that's going to be the in memoriam for him. It's at least showing part of that. Stellan Skarsgård, all-time great. Like, he's like Delroy Lindahl. The man does not deliver. And similarly, Benicio Del Toro. But I think Benicio is the single best fucking part of One Battle After Another. Maybe the only part I really enjoyed. And so, like, him winning would not have upset me. Sean Penn, like, it's fine. But I feel like this is the kind of performance Sean Penn is kind of just made for. And he is not doing anything that we haven't seen Sean Penn do 100 times.
And the other thing, okay, so, like, here's the other thing, is that this mofo has 2 Academy Awards, so you just gave him a 3rd one.
I thought this was his 4th one.
No, it's his third. It's his third. He has 2 best actors, one that he should have never have won. That stupid Mystic River, like, man, like...
Well, 2 he should have never won, because he shouldn't have won this one either.
Yeah, now he has 3. Like, Smokey McSmokerson has 3 Oscars. Like, where Delroy Lindahl has 0. Stellan Skarsgård has 0. Like, there are so many people that don't have Oscars that this man has 3 of them. Now, Sean Penn in the 80s and Sean Penn in the 90s, up until Dead Man Walking, which he won his first Oscar for, completely understandable. Like, me and Scott got into an argument about this, which is fun. Because I told him, I'm like, you know, yeah, I know that you understand, you love crime films, but you know what? You know, him screaming, "Oh, damn my daughter!" He should have never won for that movie. Clint Eastwood does not, like, has lost his touch with, like, at that moment, Mystic River, the wrong guy won. Like, he never should have won that Oscar. Never, never should have won it, because it was just a bad movie. It was a bad performance. It just, ugh. Anyways, but, like, needless to say, Sean Penn winning 3 Oscars, meanwhile, he's like, doesn't even go to the awards. Come on. Really? That's what you're going to do?
So you appreciated the shot that he took at him?
Oh, yeah. I completely loved that. Because it was hilarious. Sean
couldn't be here or didn't want to be.
Didn't want to be. Was in a war zone or something. Like, you know.
And that's not, like, I am glad Sean Penn is one of the people who seems to put not his money where his mouth is. He seems to put himself where his mouth is.
it really does. Yeah.
I agree or disagree. Like, the dude is just like, well, I'm going to go to the Ukraine because this is important to me. Like, okay. I mean, he did it with, was it Cuba? Like, he was.
No, it was Haiti when they had the floods.
That's right. Yeah.
When they had the floods and stuff. He was also, like, saving people in New Orleans when the levees broke. You know,
I'm not fucking knocking the guy's humanitarian aid, whether you agree with it or disagree with it. Like,
he got El Chapo arrested. Yeah. I mean, this motherfucker got El Chapo arrested. I mean, like,
he will show up. Like, that's like, he's not, like, I'm sure he appreciates the acclaim, but, like, it's clear what was important to him, and winning a fucking Oscar was not important to him. So good for him. I did think the shot was funny, but also he shouldn't have fucking won. Like, I'm sorry.
Yeah. I mean, he kind of knew that he wasn't, like, you know what it was? I think it was at the Golden Globes when Stellan Skarsgård won. He was like, okay, like, I can't smoke here, even though I'm smoking here. Maybe I just won't show up because I really, like, he values smoking more than he values, like, showing up to places. Like, that should tell you what this motherfucker is. Like,
and I honestly, like, part of me is like, I wish most actors felt similarly.
Yes.
To, as he does, where it's just like not putting like the value. I mean, we saw Will Smith chase a fucking Oscar for half his career.
Yeah, and then he ruined it by smacking by smacking a comedian for his dead ass wife. Like his wife and that doesn't even love him.
Yeah. And straight up class Michael B. Jordan mentioning Will Smith. Mm-hmm. And like that would have been an easy name to leave out when you're talking about the people that came here before you.
Yeah.
But straight up fucking class. All right, so best supporting actress. I only saw Sinners, One Battle After Another, and Weapons, so sentimental value I couldn't speak on. I do think it's interesting that two actresses from that movie were nominated for supporting. Like, I think that speaks volumes.
It really does. Like, when you see it, because I will ask you to see it, just because I think that...
Yeah, I've developed such ADHD that watching subtitled things has become a real problem for me.
But so like, here's the thing is that it's only subtitled maybe 40% or 50% of the time.
Okay.
Because a lot of it is in English. Like go ahead.
I was going to say, what I need to do is just train myself to because I've become one of those problem people that Netflix is making movies for, where I'm just like, I'm bored for 5 seconds at home. Let me look at my phone, you know, and I need to just, you know, put everything away while I'm watching something. I don't have that problem in a theater. Like do get a little bored sometimes, but generally if the movie's engaging, like I don't feel like I need to check my phone and it's in my pocket. You know,
no, of course,
it is mostly at home where I'm surrounded by, you know. So I wish I'd have made the effort to go see this in theaters. That said, Weapons was not a movie I loved. It is a movie I appreciate, and I'm not at all fucking mad that Amy Madigan won for Weapons because,
well, like,
it is a funny, chilling, scary, creepy, like it's just all these things rolled up into one. I mean, just the scene where she comes to Benedict Wong's house is just a masterclass in being able to act. She's literally in like 4 or 5 different genre films in that one scene.
Definitely. And also, like, okay, so, like, here's the thing is that it's partially for this wild ass performance that she literally her performance and that kid's performance literally makes or breaks that movie. But yeah, it's also a career lifetime thing because, like, when has she never not been great? Like, Amy Madigan is like one of those people that, Like her husband, Ed Harris. Like, Ed Harris still doesn't have one. I mean, he realistically should have won for Apollo 13, but he didn't. A lot of people say because of his hard politics about things. Like, he's very liberal. They're both very liberal. At a time that it was, like, super conservative. But, I mean, he should have won. He doesn't have one still. He's been nominated multiple times. He probably should have won for Truman Show because, like, he shows up and he's literally God in Truman Show. Like, and, like, to me, like, if you've not seen Truman Show recently, watch it and with the reality TV scope optics and tell me he's not fucking what's his name from Survivor, the host of Survivor, the guy who, Mark, whatever his name is, because he totally is. But again, but this one is like a combination of both. Like, Aunt Doris is like truly a wildly magnificent performance. I mean, so much so that they lampooned it. Like my favorite part of the show was the beginning with like going old school, because, you know, we were from the era where, like, for us, I think I can speak for you,
Billy Crystal was our host. He was the he did it for 8 years. He did that run for 8 years, and then for a long time it was the wilderness. Like I'm sorry, but Chris Rock, I mean, he's okay, but he's not an Oscar host. But Billy Crystal, like, his opening moments, which he stole basically from the MTV Movie Awards, but I mean, like, to have Colin Conan go back to that kind of felt
it was really good.
It was awesome. Like, you know, it was like, that's what movies, like, that's what it's about. Like the whole chase, it was like, I still can't believe that song is fucking close to 30 years old. I still can't believe that. Jesus, I'm an old man now. It is actually 30 years. It's over 30 years old. But I mean, them using it, like, it's just kind of like, but again, like, Amy Madigan, totally awesome, totally deserved it. You know, though, like you said, like the two girls from like Sentimental Value, they were great. Like Wumi Mosaku, like as Annie in Sinners, fucking awesome. Fantastic. Tiana Taylor, like, I don't think that she gets enough credit for that movie, because she
she's lobbying like P.T. Anderson to create a much in the way of like creating the backstory or more adventures
of Perfidia, Beverly Hills. Yeah, I did not know that.
Yes.
Huh. You know what? Because she's a director, I say to Tiana Taylor, I say let her, like, you know, PTA, give her a script or give her an outline and let her, like, you produce it.
I mean,
but let
we're seeing it with the Cliff Booth stuff. Like, we're getting more Cliff Booth.
No, absolutely.
So,
well, you know. And like, let's be honest, like, aren't we all really thankful that it's not Quentin directing that right now? That it's that it's Fincher.
I mean, we could get off on a little Quentin tangent, but like, talking about ruining Goodwill, man. Like,
yeah,
the weird Quentin shit. Like, I've just been shoulder shrug and been like, yeah, okay. But like, he starts going after actors that are they fucking like Oscar winners? And I mean, well, Paul Dano maybe, but like. No, they're not cream of the crop people, but they do seem like, I mean, Paul Dano's not in the fucking news. So either he's really good at keeping his like weird shit, or if he's, you know, an actual creep, he's good at keeping it out of the press, or he's just not a fucking creep. Matthew Lillard is
good guy.
Might be as unproblematic as you could possibly get for an actor, which again means he's either really, really good at not at keeping his creepy stuff out of the press, or he's just a good guy. Like, why go after these two guys? Like, and then Rosanna Arquette isn't even really talking about you. Just about the situation where she's like, in hindsight, I do think it's a little weird that QT has a fucking hall pass to just say the N-word.
Yep.
It's bizarre. And like, it doesn't really sit right with me. And she's not really insulting him. She's not insulting his direction. It's not about him. It's about the atmosphere,
the culture that allows him to make,
like,
Django.
Why does he get a pass?
Yes.
Like, why does he get a pass? Like, I think Django Unchained is a great movie, but it's also the kind of thing like where, like, okay, this probably could have been like, I wrote this script and I gave it to Spike Lee.
Yep. So, well, we both know how Spike feels about Quentin, and he would never direct it. But so, you're right. Like the thing is that, like, yeah, it's one of those things where it's like it is, like, it's been a conversation for a very long time about why he gets a pass. So I don't know why he took umbrage, because it's Rosanna Arquette. It's one of his actors, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, to go against these people. Like, it's like, bro, you live in Israel. You're away from everything. You fly in on a private jet to do your podcast with your guy, with your dude, Roger Avery, who got drunk, got into a fucking car and killed somebody and ended up in prison for 7 years.
Yeah.
And you gave him a job. Like, you are problematic. Problematic. The person. I mean, not even to mention the Harvey Weinstein of it all. Like,
yeah. So now it has become a point of like, why in a world where we've kind of like either consciously or unconsciously been like, yeah, fuck Woody Allen. Like, his shit doesn't matter anymore. Like, I mean, why are you still getting a pass for this behavior without any sort of acknowledgement from you that, like, it's not okay?
Yep.
You know, it's fucking weird. And I'm not a cancel culture person. Like, you know, Woody Allen can still get his movies made. Good for him. There's a lot of Woody Allen movies I love. I have plenty of them on Blu-ray and DVD. Yeah. Like, it's not an argument I want to get in on, but I'm also not going to stand here and be like, why doesn't Hollywood accept Woody Allen anymore? Why, like, he doesn't get to do what he wants and cast who he wants and like make his big movies and they don't get any press anymore. Like, you became a little too problematic. Things like, you probably should have been persona non grata well before this, but like, it is what it is. Okay. But yeah, like, why is Quentin still, and to have somebody say something and then your reaction is to act like a fucking child about it. It's
a petulant child.
Yeah.
Like a petulant child, dude.
I deem to give you a job. You cash that check. You sound like a fucking shithead, man. Like, you couldn't just laugh it off and be like, I don't know why, but like, he could have just been like, I don't know, but like, I've discussed it with Sam Jackson and various other people that, you know, could very clearly step in. And, you know, I always make sure it's okay with the actors involved, with the, you know, and instead he's just like, fuck you, I gave you a job. I can't believe you would say something like this about me. Like, That's not the look, man.
Like, no, it's really not. It's not like, and that's the problem. Like, but also, like, you know, I mean, I don't know, man. It's a very wild thing. Like, you know,
so since we're talking about directors and writers, back to the Oscars, best achievement in directing, Paul Thomas Anderson, who started the night with zero Oscars.
Yes. Zero winning for 14. Yeah, talk about making up for lost time, right?
Yeah. So he wins for One Battle After Another. The only, I guess, quote unquote, other dog I had in that fight is Ryan Coogler for Sinners. Mm-hmm. I like Coogler as a person. I Sinners is not, I enjoyed it, but I didn't love it the way the rest of the world seems to have loved it. I don't have a problem with it being nominated or winning anything that it won. Coogler honestly gets like best moment of the night for me, because when his who was it that won cinematography for, right, Autumn, yeah, Archipel, yeah. Like,
yep.
Coogler runs to the back of the fucking theater to get her son to bring him up so he can watch his mom win an Oscar.
No, but also win the be the first female ever to win the cinematography award.
Yes. For
the best cinematography award. Like, which, like, I mean, like Coogler is a guy who I feel like the more time, like, and the more time I think about it, the more I read, he is literally the anti-Quentin. I mean, like let's be honest, we were just talking about Quentin. Yeah. He is the anti-Quentin, but also, like, not like, the thing is that, like, my thing is like this, is Coogler, this is the first of probably multiple nominations, and yeah, he will probably eventually win. Like, I think
this really felt like, well, PTA probably should have got a Best Director Oscar before now, so yeah. I guess we'll give it to him for this.
It is. It's very much so like this is the probably the last time he will be able to, like, it's his biggest budgeted movie. It's very much so, like, you know what I love about One Battle After Another is that it is essentially a genre film that's gussied up as a Paul Thomas Anderson movie. It literally is it's a chase movie. It's no different than, it's no different than, whatchamacallit? It's no different than Terminator. It's like Terminator 2. Like, it's like people chasing people over like a chosen one that could decide the fate of a world, and like, it's literally, that's what it is. Like, and I'm not, and I appreciate it. I really like, I told you, I loved the movie. It wasn't my favorite movie of the year. Sinners was, but it's still a great movie. It's just not it's not the movie that I feel like so many people have said it is. Like, they wanted to anoint it a classic before a decade, and you can't anoint a movie a classic. Like you can't anoint a movie a classic until after a decade. Like, that's just my thing, right? Like right now, we can finally initially say that Black Panther is a classic. Yes. Like, it's been 10 years. The conversation hasn't changed. It still remains the same, right? Like Black Panther is the apex of superhero movies and social, like the convex of big budget filmmaking, important filmmaking, and themes all together, all in one fell swoop. Like, the movie is it's not changed in any way, shape, or form of being like that movie. So we can call it a classic. Like, give it time, let it breathe. I don't understand that. Like, it's, but all to say, like, I mean, it's not a bad choice. It's like something like that.
I wasn't upset with PTA winning director. Yeah. I was more upset with PTA winning best adapted screenplay.
That was a little bit like,
Again, I didn't see Train Dreams. I didn't see Hamnet. I didn't see Frankenstein. I did see Begonia. And I think Begonia is I don't know. I'm trying to think of it. I guess, for lack of a better word in the current parlance, it just cooks. That movie is so electric, intense. And I know a lot of it's the directing and the acting and but also, the script is just, I don't know, it really just sizzles. And One Battle After Another, there was a lot that I just didn't love from the story standpoint. So I wish Begonia would have won. I, again, hadn't seen the other three movies, so I don't really know.
Also, to be quite honest, I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that Yorgos had gone on a run between The Favorite and Poor Things. If if either, like, if he didn't get lauded the way that he did for Poor Things, like, it was two in a row, like, right? Like, it was actually more than that. Like, it started with Dogtooth, and then The Lobster, Killing of a Sacred Deer, The Favorite, Poor Things. And then, like, Begonia was like a comeback because I don't know anybody other than me that liked Kinds of Kindness, which was a wild-ass three-hour movie that, I mean, it's the most Yorgos movie. But, like, it's almost like, it's like those movies that people hated on because they just needed to hate on it because, like, it was, okay, you know what it is? To bring it back, like, it's kind of funny. To bring it back to Quentin, it was how everybody felt about Jackie Brown was, like, they didn't want to anoint him again because it had been three in a row, right? It'd been Reservoir Dogs, Pulp Fiction, and then Jackie Brown. Like if they had lauded it in the same way,
I mean, Jackie Brown is better than both of those movies.
But we all do now. But that's the thing, right? Like we all think the same thing is like fucking Jackie Brown's actually like the best of his fucking thing. Like it has heart and soul. It's fucking constructed perfectly. It's got great performances.
It's adapted from another story. So
exactly.
A lot of those things are Quentin like adapting, like it's him pulling from somewhere else. So it feels like it doesn't have the thing that Pulp Fiction and Reservoir Dogs, like it, I don't want to say bitter, but like it's not as,
it's not as hipster. Like, the thing, like, for me, like, the thing that always makes Quentin's movies kind of weird is that there's this thing where it's like, well, I'm cooler than you. And I'm going to show you why I'm cooler than you.
Exactly.
And Jackie Brown is not that, because it's about, like, these people in middle life that are struggling to make that final push to like be able to survive the second half of their life. And there's no like for me it's like it's not people that are thinking that they're smarter than like Quentin. Like there's a thing where if like if Jackie Brown had made $100 million, I feel like Quentin would have ended up becoming more like the Coen brothers where he made movies about stupid people, because man, he can write stupid people gloriously. And if anything, if you've learned anything about my taste in movies, is that if you can write somebody stupid, like truly stupid, that's why I love Begonia, because Begonia is about some stupid people that ended up just happened to be right. But there's an art to writing people that are stupid, because there's a logic behind
it. He's very, very good. Like, and sneakily, like, good at writing stupid. Like, if you look at when I was younger and I saw Pulp Fiction for the first time, I thought those characters were like, oh man, they know, like they're just good at, they know things, you know. Like, you feel like they're cool and they're knowledgeable, but most of those characters are fucking idiots. And a lot of the reason that movie plays out the way it does is because of their dumbass decisions.
Yeah. Like snorting heroin and thinking it's cocaine.
Fucking dumb.
Or a stabbing motion. And you're like, taking we need to have to stab three times?
Wife. Yes. Out. Like, what the fuck are you doing, man? Like, I mean, we're pulling for Bruce Willis, but like, you agree to throw a fight and then you fuck over the biggest mobster like around and then try to go on the run. Like, I mean, Travolta gets killed in Pulp Fiction because he took a shit in the bathroom of a guy he was coming to kill.
Yes. And was reading a book, like literally, like got shot up because he was taking a shit because he was stupid, like literally, there is a through line of stupid people, but I feel like Jackie Brown makes the reality of that all like so palpable. And I just wish that like there's a part of me that wishes that he had gone the Coen brothers route. Like, I mean, not even the Coens are doing stupid anymore the way that they used to. I mean, like, you know, I think that they stopped after between Fargo and Oh Brother. Like, Oh Brother, I don't know, may be the apex of it. They loved them up to a hornet toad. Quentin, man, it's very complicated now because it's just like, there's a part of me that just wants him to get to his 10th movie so that we can stop this.
He's becoming the George R. Martin.
You're
never he's producing a play on the West End. He wrote a play and so now that's what's going to take up. Gave yourself this arbitrary, stupid fucking thing, and now you're doing literally anything so that you don't have to do this. You don't have to hold yourself to your word.
And there's also a rumor that he's making a TV. He's gonna do a TV show.
Yeah.
Well, the Bounty Law TV show. Like, they literally said that he's had meetings with Leo about doing the Bounty Law TV show. So, literally, it's like what Soderbergh said about retirement. He's like, that was the stupidest fucking thing I ever said. I never should have said that I was going to retire.
That's the thing. He came back and was like, that was, you know, we were talking about Jim Carrey, who kind of does this, I'm retired. Oh, Sonic? Okay, I'm in. Okay, they're willing to just let themselves look like idiots for something that they said and been like. And when somebody calls them on it, just go, I'm going to retire after this one. And then not fucking retire when they do Sonic 5. You know, it's fine.
Yeah.
You know what? That was stupid. I should have never said that when I was, 22 making fucking movies, man. I'm only gonna do 10 movies and then I'm done. And how many movies could you have made by now if you weren't holding yourself to, would they all be what most people consider masterpieces? Maybe not, but Ridley Scott doesn't always make great movies, but some of the best movies ever made are Ridley Scott movies. Take a shot. You don't instead, you never take the shots because you're like, I have this rule. I'm only going to make 10 movies. You're a fucking idiot, man. Yorgos Lanthimos makes a movie almost every year. What are you talking about?
Seriously. That's what I was thinking about. Is Yorgos makes some weird shit, dude. He doesn't hold anything. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But in Yorgos's eyes, it feels like, oh, well,
it's just this is fun.
Yeah.
What the fuck are you talking about, Yorgos? I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. And then he's like, and then whenever he gets into trouble, all he needs to do is Emma, I need you to make a movie with me.
Yeah.
At this point, whenever they do a movie, it's a guaranteed Oscar nomination for her.
Yeah,
you know that she's in the bag when she shaved her head live.
Yeah.
On screen for Begonia. You just knew, she's going to work with this dude until the end. They're going to be De Niro and Scorsese. I mean, she's already won 2 Oscars with him. I'm guaranteeing you that she'll probably win at least one more with him because the only reason why she didn't really campaign. You didn't see her really interview much for Begonia. It was oh yeah, I love Begonia. It was a great movie. And then it was released and it dropped and then everybody was just wow, this is fucking weird. But I guarantee you, if she had pushed as hard as she did for Poor Things, remember Poor Things? Poor Things is a weirder fucking movie than Begonia. Oh, God.
We've talked about this. I was kind of out on Yorgos for a good long while because I knew everything was just so fucking weird. And now having, Begonia was the first, this kind of looks up my alley. And also there's this mystery of is she, isn't she? And I really want to know, like, how the film is going to resolve that. Like, even though I knew, like, going into it, and I know this is, I know it's adapted, which is why I think it should have won an adapted screenplay award. But, like, I knew going in, like, oh, it's going to be, like, she is, she isn't, she is, she isn't, she is. And then in the end, spoilers for Begonia, you're going to find out that, like, oh, she actually is, they were right all along. Like, but the movie does have a really good time of, like, convincing you that she isn't. Like, it's a lot of legwork to just be, like, no, she is, like, we're giving you all of the proof that she isn't. And then it takes this fucking... Like, it's not even like, oh, she is. And then it's like a little weird at the end. It's full on batshit insane at the end. And it's like, what the fuck? So, yeah, like that got me. Like the mystery of it got me in. And I'll probably wind up going back and like filling in my Yorgos Lanthimos, like, you know, scratch card and being like, yeah, yeah, I've seen them all. But yeah, I'm with you. She's probably going to win at least one more with him. And I imagine they'll be at least production partners for every movie he makes. Like, oh, I think she enjoys working with him and enjoys him, unless something happens, just to be part of like his world for the foreseeable future. They'll just continue to make movies together. So the other screenplay Oscar, best original screenplay. Mm-hmm. I'm so happy Sinners won, even though it's not a movie that I loved and I didn't see any of the other movies, but it meant Ryan Coogler got an Oscar and that makes me really happy. But also the recognition, and I get like the Academy, the uppity part of it, will like to pat themselves on the back because they're awarding something that speaks about, as a fucking Southern white dude, I shouldn't say this, but speaks about the Black experience in America. Mm-hmm. But also like, a vampire movie won best original screenplay.
Yeah, like it's also it's weirdly coded because it's like, so you gave like, is this going to be the new because Jordan Peele won best original screenplay for Get Out? Is that whenever there's a, like, you know, verbose black visual director that like gets up to best director, you're going to give them this award? Though, like I said, like, no Academy Award is any kind of lesser for winning one. Like, as much as like we were just talking shit about Sean Penn, I mean, you know, like, there's a reason why he's won three, and it's because most of the Academy think of him as like the best actor. Yeah. That is current best male actor currently working. Like, he is literally Meryl Streep and like Robert De Niro, like that level. And that's what they're trying to say. I mean, cause there's as much of a, but also until, there's a bunch of old white dudes.
And until he burns that with like a string of like direct to DVD shitty foreign made films, yeah, it's gonna be, and I think probably the one guy who won't do that is Sean Penn.
Yeah, because, no, Sean Penn will never do that. Yeah. I mean, he may end up like, and I don't even think he would do this, he may end up doing a Taylor Sheridan TV show, but I don't think he will, not unless they like they pay him like gobs of money. But even then, I don't think he would be
like literally in Sam Elliott age of like,
yeah. Old, I mean, he kind of is. Kind of,
I mean, he's getting there, yeah. But he's not quite. No, not like so old where it's just like, I just want to stay at home. But like, I mean, Sean Penn might be a guy that gets killed in a war zone because he's fucking taking photographs, you know, like
he's, it's literally
that level of, you know, he's going to put himself, you know, out there.
Well, it's like, okay, so it, like, it's not a very well-known movie, and it's kind of a shame, but like his movie that he did with Ben Stiller, The Secret Life of Walter Mitty, like the
I like that fucking movie. I think it's so good. And it just kind of disappeared, man.
Yeah. And the thing is that like the way that they got Sean Penn to do that movie was that he's literally fucking playing Sean Penn. He's playing because Sean Penn is like this, like what I loved about it was that they took his image and they kind of skewed it just a little bit. And it's perfect that you get Sean Penn to be in a Ben Stiller movie, but also he is not only the best part of The Secret Life of Walter Mitty, but he's also the most important part because if his role doesn't work, like the whole movie collapses. And it, like, he so works, like it's such a, like it is such an interesting way to approach The Secret Life of Walter Mitty. But also like I said, like it's this kind of great, like Sean Penn performance that nobody, like, I mean, and he's literally named Sean, I think, in the movie. Like, and he's a photojournalist, but that's what he fucking does. Like he's like this dude that just, I don't know, whatever happened to him in high school and like fucked him up, like, and he wanted to be an actor, but then all of a sudden it just got boring. Like whatever it was, like, I'm okay with it because like the work he does is like, it used to be when I was a kid, I was like, oh man, he's up his own ass. But then like, I don't know what it was, but there was something, I think it was like watching him, like literally he was like literally they could not get pictures of him, but he was still like, they were like reporting that Sean Penn was like in New Orleans saving people, like literally his own money, using hundreds of thousands of dollars to use boats to save people off of like their homes because the levees had broken. Like they literally saving thousands of people. Like I was like, okay, this guy is not like, it's not performative. It's real. Like, and then watching him do all this stuff, like Bosnia, Croatia, it's like, it's almost like the same way that Angelina Jolie is like she does her stuff, her philanthropic stuff, and she talks about it, but it's not performative. It's like real. It's like, oh, you really do care about this stuff, you know? Yeah. And then of course, like anybody who catches El Chapo, like the feds couldn't even catch El Chapo, but you caught him. Like what is that? Like does, do you worry about the cartels like coming after you and shit? Or are you just Sean Penn smoking cigarettes? Like, I don't care.
Yeah. It's fucking wild. All right, so we can end talking about some music. I thought I was gonna bring up Best Animated Feature, but like,
yeah.
Other than Zootopia 2, I didn't see any of those, and it doesn't bother me that K-pop Demon Hunters won, because I, even though Zootopia 2 was made so much fucking money, I understand like the phenomenon of K-pop Demon Hunters. Was such that like it was a movie Sony didn't know what the fuck to do with. Netflix bought it, and then Netflix had to admit that like, oh shit, I guess we have to put this in theaters. Like, that's wild. And you know, I guess in and of itself is deserving of a wins, and it also wins best song. And here's the thing, here's what I know about K-pop Demon Hunters. Everything I just said, and this fucking song, because it was everywhere.
Yep.
It was inescapable. Do I actually think it was the best song? No, probably not. But like, I mean, what are you going to do, man? Like, and the performance was great. Her, her speech was phenomenal. Like, I'm glad it won, best original song.
Yeah.
Like Sinners would have been cooler because it would have give, since we're on music, would have given Goranson another Oscar. But that's okay because he won Best Achievement in Music or Original Score. Like that's a tough category. I do think Johnny Greenwood's score for One Battle After Another is pretty good, even though I don't love that movie. But I also think Goranson is, I mean, this dude's undeniable, man.
Oh no, absolutely. He's
42. Well, not even he's 41. He'll be 42 this year. He's won 3 Oscars. I mean, he's Coogler's fucking guy, man.
Well, and here's the thing is that he's Childish Gambino's producer. He's produced songs for Adele, Kendrick, Chaim, Chance, Travis Scott, Rihanna. Like literally, he's not just a film composer. He's a music, like he was Quincy Jones.
He did the Community.
The series.
All of that's him. He is so fucking good. But like on the flip side, and I know we see a lot of like cherished composers, like, and you look at their filmography and you're like, they did the music for that. But like the music in Venom is Ludwig Göransson. I love this guy. I fucking love him. And I will never not be happy that he wins an Oscar.
He's great. He's great. He's literally white Quincy Jones. That's who he is. Quincy in the 60s and 70s was literally winning Oscars hand over fist for his scores and was producing everybody. I mean, and then in the 80s became the richest man in the world because he wrote, because he produced Thriller. And then did We Are the World. You could see Göransson in his 50s and 60s becoming that kind of level of person, because I mean, I wouldn't call him John Williams because he doesn't, his sound is nothing
John Williams feels like classical stuff.
That's Giacchino. Michael Giacchino is definitely the equivalent. But like I said, I think Ludwig Göransson is a lot like I never got Quincy until Ludwig was I'm now I get Quincy. I get why so many people lost their shit, because it's very Göransson's stuff that's not his stuff that isn't the stuff it's going to be of an era, but also it's not, because it's very kind of
But he has this, he also has this Ennio Morricone
vibe. Very much so. Yeah. The Mandalorian stuff is very, very of that kind of let's go ahead and take woodwinds and make them badass. Because how many scores that you think of okay, what's badass? Let's use some woodwinds. Let's use a flute.
It's the kind of thing and especially in the last 30 years, you only hear in movies where there's some kind of Asian component to them.
Yes.
You know, stuff like Karate Kid, know, it has a mystical vibe to it, you know, and he is able to just make them so fucking badass. And there's some of that in Sinners, because there is kind of a Western vibe to it.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I love this dude. He wasn't even on my radar until I'd seen a lot of stuff he had done, but he just, especially Community, but he just wasn't on my radar. And then it was, to your point, it was the score for The Mandalorian, because music is, to borrow a phrase from Rebel Force Radio, it is the oxygen of Star Wars. And so it has to be a character. And then oh fuck, who is this guy? And then I start looking at him oh wait, I love this guy. And I mean, I also love, going back to Coogler, I said, I love that he's Coogler's guy. From the first movie.
Well, they were roommates. They were college roommates. Did you know that? Like, they were college roommates.
No, I did not know that.
So, in his speech, he talks about, like, the guitar that his dad gave him was the guitar that got him into music, that got him to USC, that got him to become friends with Kukler. And without Kukler, he doesn't have these moments because he doesn't meet Childish Gambino, he doesn't meet Donald Glover because he doesn't get the work on Community. Like, literally, like, all of this stuff is because of this guitar. But he was he was in the same class that that Coogler was, and they were roommates at the same time that Chloe Zhao, it was also a USC, like, they were all at USC at the same time, like, and Chloe Zhao and him but basically came up at the same time. That's why they're friends, is because both of their movies, their first movies, Fruitvale Station for him, and I can't remember what her movie was, both went to Sundance. And they got into the Sundance program through those movies. And so they, or their short films, I'm sorry, that eventually ended up being their first movies. So, yeah, it's all weirdly connected for him.
It feels like a new class of, like, Spielberg, Lucas, like that kind of thing, where these people are, like, kind of interconnected with each other but not competing.
Yes. Very much so. Very, very much so. Like, they're not in comp, like, it's like what that Coogler declined his Academy Award or his Academy entrance.
Yeah. Because he didn't want to judge his peers.
His peers. And that's kind of beautiful. Like that's like for a guy that's been nominated now, like, you know, multiple times, it's kind of wild that he's not going to be in the Academy. One of their brightest hopes. But also like this class is like very different than the class before them or like any of them. Like, they feel more like the 70s guys.
Yeah.
Like guys like De Palma and Scorsese and Spielberg, like all of them not competing, like it's a friendly competition, but it's like, right. let me help you with your movie.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not on this level. It's not something we've seen. And like, I mean, to your point, like in a very, very long time, like, you know, they're kind of using, like they're using the studio system to their advantage, not playing into the fucking studio politics of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just really nice. Like, again, didn't love Sinners, like, so happy for Coogler and company. Wish it had gotten more love, because even though it's a movie I didn't truly love, like, it's a movie I can appreciate, like, the effort it took. Like, it's an original idea. It's built from the ground up, you know, and so it's hard to just be, again, even though I didn't love it, it's hard to be shitty about it, because like, good for all of them, and it should have gotten probably almost every award it was fucking nominated for.
Yeah.
You know, it's great. So anyway, we haven't talked about this, but before we close out, we can say, like, get into a little bit about like what we're going to do for next week, because there's two movies coming out that I think we're both on different levels excited for. Mm-hmm. Ready or Not 2. Still haven't watched the first one. Probably watching that tonight. But I think the biggest movie is probably Ryan Gosling's new film.
Yeah, Project Hail Mary. Like,
yeah, which so many people are going on and on and on about how great it is. So what's your plan?
So Ready or Not is going to be later on in the weekend, so I can't see it. But we're actually watching Project Hail Mary on Friday, so okay, we will be able to watch it or be able to talk about it.
We're doing, our plan right now is to do the LIMAX. Mm-hmm. For Project Hail Mary. Stephanie read the book and has been super excited to see the movie. So she's never seen The Martian.
Oh, so, well, then yeah. you definitely got to have her watch that one.
Yeah, I was like, The Martian is like surprisingly fucking great. Like, I mean, in hindsight, of course, it's great. But like at the time, it's like, I don't know. It's just such a well-made movie. And yep. It all starts with like, I didn't read the book, but I imagine that book's pretty damn good. So the plan is next week, we're going to talk about Project Hail Mary. I may have seen Ready or Not 2 by then. I don't know. I will have seen Ready or Not 1. So we can get into a little bit of that as well. But until then, you can check out everything else we do over at xwingfiles.com, or you can read our written work over at Adam's website.
Yes, themovieisle.com, where right now we've got a bunch of stuff coming up. I've been super busy, so it's some of the posting has been not like it's been a lighter couple of weeks, but I'm getting ramped up. There's going to be a lot of good stuff coming up, a lot of good 4K content that I've got coming to you guys very shortly.
So we'll actually see you guys in a few days because we're recording this on a Tuesday.
Yes.
So we'll be back then.
We'll be back then, guys. Number 2 comics, number 3 Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit, number 4 Mario, number 5 Weird Al, number 6 Batman, number 7 Kal-El, number 8 Simpsons, number 9 TV, number 10 every single band that has stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out, say hello together if you're with me now. Nerds ruin everything.